Whenever you're ready, appellant may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is David Robbins. I am a special assistant public defender and a pro bono attorney for appellant Michelle Frisbee. At the core of this case is a failing of the constitutional safeguards designed to protect citizens from unreasonably intrusive state action. When reviewed under the totality of circumstances, the warrant in this case has three key features that indicate constitutional overreach and mandate this court's reversal of the lower court's decision finding sufficient probable cause. First, the warrant fails to establish a direct connection between Ms. Frisbee's residence, the place to be searched, and any illegal activity. Secondly, the informant testimony relied on in the warrant affidavit shares either innocuous information or is insufficiently corroborated by police efforts. Third, even if the warrant does make a sufficient showing of probable cause, it does so only in light of a material omission made either recklessly or knowingly by the warrant affiant Nicholas Walsh.
Where that car was stopped.
Correct. The timing and where the car was stopped. Correct, Your Honor. With regard to a direct connection, Minnesota courts have required typically that the state demonstrate a fair probability that contraband will be located in a particular place to be searched. Typically, this is a direct connection standard, requiring that the warrant affidavit set forth facts upon which the state can establish a direct connection between illegal activity and the particular place to be searched. Here, that's Ms. Frisbee's home. A review of the warrant affidavit indicates that there's two particular direct allegations of illegal activity. As Your Honor pointed out, the arrest of one Mr. Devin Bryson. During Mr. Bryson's arrest, 25 grams of controlled substance were recovered by law enforcement. What's the relationship between Mr. Bryson's arrest and Ms. Frisbee's home? Well, the warrant affidavit generally puts out facts that say the car Mr. Bryson was in, which is registered to his girlfriend, Ms. Taylor Patzel, was located at some point earlier in the day of his arrest, February 13, 2017, at Ms. Frisbee's residence. Mr. Bryson was arrested at approximately 10:45 in the evening on February 13th. During that arrest, 25 grams of contraband were recovered by law enforcement. What is not stated in the warrant affidavit, however, is the time that Mr. Bryson was located at Ms. Frisbee's residence. It just simply says some point earlier in the day. 10:45 p.m. gives a lot of potential time when Ms. Patzel's car could have been seen at Ms. Frisbee's house. It also doesn't say that Mr. Bryson was seen that particular day at Ms. Frisbee's home. It just says the car was seen.
To just jump in for a second. So the affidavit also does cover, you know, at least a month, perhaps more than that, 6 weeks or more of surveillance that was done by the officer that signed the affidavit.
Yeah.
And that does include some observations of Mr. Bryson.
Yes, Your Honor.
So he has been seen at the residence by the police officer, and at least it's stated as more than once.
Yes, Your Honor. The affidavit does set forth facts stating that Mr. Bryson was seen at some point during the 6 weeks of surveillance. It's not clear if it was during the officer surveillance or the informant saw Mr. Bryson there. However, he was only identified carrying contraband, 25 grams of controlled substance, on February 13th, and it's not clear if
the greatest detail. You're definitely right about that, but the affidavit does refer to illegal use of drugs by those that are visiting in all hours of the night and with the Ms. Frisbee going in and out from the house to the vehicles. Bryson's in that group of known drug users.
Yes, Your Honor. I assume you're speaking particularly about their criminal histories.
Well, I'm just trying to sort of do what I think I'm supposed to do, which is look at the totality of the circumstances. So
yes.
All of the circumstances alleged as opposed to breaking it down. I understand your argument as to the specific arrest that was performed on the 13th. The distance is certainly omitted, the distance between the location where Mr. Bryson was and the home. But there is the effort, I think if you read the whole search warrant, to link that arrest back to the residence that was searched. Based on this pattern of conduct where Mr. Bryson was present at the house in a vehicle, Frisbee's going back and forth. I mean, so tell me your response to all of that.
Yes, Your Honor. So if we look at the exact facts set forth in the warrant affidavit, Ms. Frisbee is seen visiting vehicles. It's never said that she's visiting vehicles of third parties. It's possible that she was visiting vehicles of her own in the driveway during nighttime hours. Ms. Frisbee's house is visited by individuals with criminal records. The criminal records include relatively minor drug convictions. I believe almost without exception, there are no convictions for sales, just for possession. And almost without exception, fourth and fifth degree convictions.
Of the people who are visiting.
And Ms. Frisbee and the occupants of the home, Your Honor.
Okay.
I mean, the search warrant is missing a lot of details. I don't think anybody's going to say otherwise. The district court judge was pretty frank in that regard as well. But it does say, you know, in terms of what are the, summarizing the officer's observations over the course of the surveillance of the home. So again, I'm trying to focus on what is linked to this residence. Does say that we have suspicious activity, including frequent visits to the vehicles parked in the driveway, oftentimes between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m., and that Frisbee frequently goes to and from the vehicles parked in the driveway, and they specifically list Mr. Bryson as one of the known visitors in the vehicles. So, and obviously inferences are allowed to be drawn by the signing judge.
Of course, Your Honor. Yeah. In State v. Carter, the Minnesota Supreme Court addressed what I think is a factually similar circumstance. In that case, Carter was seen going to and from a storage locker multiple times over 4 weeks of surveillance. Informant testimony verified that. Informant testimony also indicated that there were certain other suspicious activities that were akin to criminal activity, potentially, along with the fact that not only did Mr. Carter have a criminal record, his known associates had criminal records. This case is almost exactly the same as the facts set forth in Carter, except for Mr. Bryson's arrest with 25 grams of controlled substances. And that's why I'm speaking in particular with particular import about Mr. Bryson's arrest. If we look at the facts about the activity at Ms. Frisbee's home, she's awake at all hours of the day, allegedly. She goes to her vehicle multiple times, though it's never defined how many times this activity is seen. It could be twice that she's been awake at night. This is consistent with potentially someone having a nighttime job and forgetting their cell phone charger and needing to use a cigarette lighter charger in their car, and they're checking their cell phone in their car. There are a number of other non-criminal and innocuous explanations for Ms. Frisbee's activity. I think that law enforcement implicitly recognized the import of Mr. Bryson's arrest. He was arrested on February 13th. The very next day, February 14th, law enforcement rushed to the magistrate judge requesting a warrant. After 6 weeks of surveillance, they didn't engage, or perhaps they engaged, but they didn't successfully engage in a single controlled buy at Ms. Frisbee's home. They didn't walk away with a single evidence, or a single piece of direct evidence that Ms. Frisbee's house actually held drugs. And it's unclear, Your Honors, if law enforcement is indicating from the warrant affidavit that they believe Ms. Frisbee's a drug trafficker or she's a casual drug user. It would seem that they've kind of blended both. But I'm operating on the assumption with the traffic, they're making an allegation, and then the visits to the vehicles in the driveway, they're making an allegation that this is some sort of drug trafficking operation. There is no controlled buy. Successful in this case, And the only drugs that are ever apprehended after 6 weeks, a fairly long time of surveillance, the only drugs that are apprehended are the drugs that are found on Mr. Bryson, which I would posit are less likely to have come from Ms. Frisbee's home than they are more likely to have come from either Mr. Bryson's home or Ms. Patzel's home.
So I think one of the things that struck me about the affidavit to support the search warrant is in the affiant's background, and he didn't talk about drug dealers. He said drug users commonly, drug users he, drug users are part, drug users hide contraband, and drug users use vehicles to transport. So I agree with you that I don't think they were... The affidavit does not support an inference that they were looking at her as a drug dealer or anything other than a drug user.
I agree, Your Honor, and I think that Minnesota courts have also, in, for instance, State v. Yarbrough, have held that it's less likely that casual drug users will keep drugs within their home, kind of heightening, if you will, the standard that would need to be shown to make that direct connection. They don't have any other than just what State v. Carter, in fact, in analyzing whether or not a dog sniff was sufficient to sniff a, or a dog, there was sufficient reasonable suspicion to authorize a dog sniff of a storage locker. They analyzed that under a reasonable suspicion standard, and they found that frequent visits, criminal histories, and suspicious activity isn't just insufficient to establish probable cause. It's insufficient to establish reasonable suspicion. This case, without Bryson's arrest, again, looks a whole heck of a lot like Carter. We have suspicious activity, I suppose. It certainly doesn't fall within the fold of normal human activity. She's awake at hours that, you know, most of us are not awake at, but there's people out there with nighttime jobs. Certainly when Your Honors, or when I was in law school, we all had many all-nighters. It happens.
But we seldom went out and talked to people in the driveway while we were doing that.
Well, Your Honor, the allegation about what happened in the driveway, there is no exchange, there is no conversation. She's visiting cars. And the affidavit never...
Right, but I guess I'm responding to, if she had a nighttime job, it seems like she'd go out and get in her car and go to a job. Or if she was up studying or working or whatever, it seems unlikely that you'd run outside, talk to someone in a car, or go to a car repeatedly.
Well, sure, Your Honor, but there are also other potential rational explanations for that, right? It's February in Minnesota. She might have an older car, need to start it so that it continues to run. Again, I posit that she could have forgotten her cell phone charger, lost her cell phone charger, needed to charge her cell phone in her car.
But those are the sorts of things where the cases say we ordinarily prefer warrants, and so we sort of defer to the issuing judge because we would rather that they went and talked to the judge beforehand.
Yes, Your Honor, but the deference given to the magistrate judges is not boundless.
Absolutely.
And this case... I am relying quite a bit here on Carter because it's hard to distinguish this case from Carter unless you give a necessary amount of importance to the Bryson arrest. Here we have...
That's the part of your argument that I'm struggling with, is that, you know, because Carter was so focused on the dog sniff issue, all right? And you are correct that once they took out the dog sniff, you know, they made the decision they did with regard to the other facts and that there are some parallels. But we do have the Bryson arrest, and we do have the observation in this search warrant of Mr. Bryson at the residence involving these frequent visits in the middle of the night. And whatever you might say about the possible inferences, other inferences that could have been drawn, you know, we tend to defer to the signing judge with regard to the inferences that on the totality of the circumstances support an inference of illegal activity at the residence. Not just in the car that Mr. Bryson was driving later, but that it actually happened at the residence.
Yes, Your Honor. What I would say is Mr. Bryson's arrest might be suspicious. The fact that we know that Mr. Bryson, from reviewing his criminal history, that he has some sort of relationship with controlled substances. The drugs are just kind of icing on the cake, I suppose. But we know that he's a known drug user. The question is, what is the nexus between those drugs, or any drugs, and Ms. Frisbee's home? And here I would say that there is no nexus. The only direct connection, and the state points this out in their brief, the only real direct connection between Ms. Frisbee's home and, quote, illegal activity is really suspicious activity.
How do you respond to the state's request that we exclude the addendum maps from the record?
Your Honor, the state has not made a formal motion to strike, and even if they had, I think that you can take judicial notice of the location of where the arrests were made. That's information that's in the record.
Well, wasn't the arrest like 10 miles away?
Yes, Your Honor.
As someone who lives in rural Minnesota and lived all my life in rural Minnesota, that's not very far.
Yes, Your Honor, but
that... Not. You go out to a friend's house there in the country, they're 10 miles away. I mean... That's not unusual.
Your Honor, and I'm not saying that they're not friends and they're not known associates. What I am saying, and the reason why I'm drawing the importance of the distance is because the state's making some sort of inference that it's implied in the warrant that Mr. Bryson came from Ms. Frisbee's home. He was traveling on Highway 14. He was impaired. He was having car trouble at the time of his initial encounter with law enforcement, nearly an hour before his arrest. So I'm simply saying, by drawing out the distance, that he wasn't there within the previous hour, if not even more than
20. Which I think they have to agree to. I mean, it seems as if that part's undisputed. It was some time.
Yep. Yes, Your Honor. And I see that I'm nearly out of time, so unless the court has any questions, I will just simply ask that this court reverse the lower court's finding of sufficient probable cause and remand for dismissal. Thank you.
Thank you. And you will have 5 minutes on rebuttal if you wish to use that time. State may proceed whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Assistant Winona County Attorney Christina Galeski on behalf of the respondent, the state of Minnesota. Before the court today are fairly straightforward questions. Was there probable cause supporting the search warrant? Yes. The signing judge signed it, identifying that there was probable cause, and the district court upheld that challenge. Second, was there a material omission? District court found that there was no material omission relating to that traffic stop. Even if this court has issues with either two of those questions, there still is the reasonable articulable suspicion supporting the probationary search as both of the people residing at 185 Main Street were on felony level probation.
But that was never addressed at the district court level.
Your Honor, the district court decided it did not need to be addressed because he found that there was probable cause. The district court did note that he was giving great deference to the signing judge, and that is the policy of the courts, that we prefer that law enforcement would come and first seek a neutral magistrate's review.
So the affiant said that, quote, he believed there was illegal drug activity ongoing at the residence. What was the illegal drug activity? Using meth?
Your Honor, what we have is the facts that are in the affidavit. So I believe that the affiant believed that there was controlled substance use, specifically with belief that it could be methamphetamine or alpha PVP given all hours of the day. The affiant did note in his training and experience portion that he knows that those are stimulants and that it can keep people up for hours, if not for days. Furthermore, there is the common sense practical inference with all of the activity at the house that would be consistent with drug dealing and drug use. So it's not that we
have... But that's not stated by the affiant.
But we do have the common sense and reasonable conclusions.
And it wasn't adopted by the district court judge when the district court reviewed it. District court didn't decide that that was the natural inference from the facts alleged in the affidavit. That drug sale as opposed to drug use.
Right. So we don't know exactly what Ms. Frisbee was doing, but what we do know is that she was on probation, that she was on felony level probation with prior controlled substance offenses. She resided with someone who had prior controlled substance offenses. And that through the surveillance, there were individuals who were able to be identified and who also have controlled substance offense histories.
I guess what I didn't ask very well, and I am jumping in on Judge Riley's question, so I apologize if I'm not getting it quite right. But so it does, in reviewing this and determining probable cause, do we need to conclude that there was this common sense inference of drug sale? Or can we just stop at drug use, which appears to be the plain vanilla allegation or factual claim of the affiant?
I don't believe that there's any need to determine whether it was sale or was whether it was use, but do we have a fair probability that there will be contraband or evidence found of a crime? Here, our factors indicate that there is that fair probability that contraband or evidence specifically of a controlled substance crime would be found at the residence. Appellant did mention about, you know, all these different measures that could have been taken, but every case is unique. And I do just want to clarify, it doesn't matter the amount of contraband that was in the house. Possession of methamphetamine or alpha PVP in any amount is an illegal offense, and it is something that an officer can apply for a search warrant in order to find evidence of if that search warrant is supported by probable cause, and here it was. For example, in support of that, even if we just had a trash pull in the residence, that's not the case here, but just to point out the quantity doesn't matter, that would be sufficient to get officers into the house because it would establish that fair probability that there's further evidence inside of the residence.
Those cases involve a lot less sort of supposition by the judge, because when you do a trash pull, you usually have something that's measurable. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, we found this particular drug in the trash at this particular house. Here it seems like we've got, it looks kind of hinky what's all going on there.
And every case is different. And I think the role in reviewing is, you know, what are the facts that are included in the four corners of the search warrant? Again, the probationary provision puts the entire case into context. Probationers are considered more likely to commit a crime than other persons, especially if their conduct is similar in nature to what's being
so
alleged.
I struggle with your probationer argument, not just because the district court judge didn't adopt it, mm-hmm. but because this is a warrant search. So the state is required to have probable cause to have that warrant issued upon probable cause.
And Your Honor, if I can...
So why would we go to the warrantless search that is allowed of a probationer? I mean, why revert to that argument unless you think you don't have probable cause to support the warrant?
The state's position is that there is probable cause that supports the warrant that was found by the district court judge and the signing judge. The state believes that's there. But if this court should find that it's not there for some reason, an alternative argument would be the probationary search. And if I can give an example to put that into context. So if you have an instance, you have two officers. One waits with the suspect. One goes off to draft a search warrant. The officer who drafts the search warrant puts the wrong address on the application and on the search warrant, and they don't have other language that would therefore make it valid. So you have an invalid search warrant. But while that officer is off drafting that search warrant, you have the officer waiting with the suspect, and he receives valid consent for the search. That valid consent is not invalidated by the fact that officers also took the step to protect the suspect and getting that neutral, independent review. So in light of that, it's an alternative should you not find that there is sufficient probable cause. However, here there is sufficient probable cause when you look at everything together. I don't think the signing judge or the district court needs to necessarily articulate all of the reasonable inferences that could be made, but the state is able to put forth in its argument, including in its brief, how all of those factors, when they come together, do support that probable cause determination.
So one of the arguments that's made in the appellant's brief has to do with reference to the Supreme Court's commentary, for instance, in the Yarborough case in 2014, that where we have warrants issued, and those warrants are issued with relation to viewing criminal activity and is there a direct link over to the residence. But we're going to look at the totality of the circumstances differently when the reasonable inferences relate to trafficking or wholesaling of drugs as opposed to casual use of drugs. So, and you kind of alluded to this earlier where you talked about how we need to, you know, view all of the evidence as a whole, and every case is different. Well, give me your argument with respect to just drug use in this case, because that appears to be the only, is our review different in a case where the inference of illegal activity or the allegation of illegal activity is only drug use?
Your Honor, I don't believe it is. Certainly there's been a change in the law, so depending on the quantity, you could have a gross misdemeanor offense. But for the most part, you have felony-level offenses when you're looking at methamphetamine use or alpha PVP use. So this, with the whole hours being awake at night, that's not necessarily consistent with marijuana use, but we're looking at the controlled substances that we typically treat as a felony-level offense. So when you piece that all together, you have this consistent contact with users when the individuals in the home are told not to be involved with users. Specifically, Ms. Frisbee was instructed by probation not to be with other felons, and they are at the house. That goes to the fact that she is likely using. There is that common sense, practical inference that people who engage in that drug subculture associate with one another. The affiant does briefly mention that as well in his background. But to further lay that out, you need access to the controlled substances, so you need someone else who's engaged in it. It's safer to use controlled substances when someone else is present in case you do overdose. You can provide aid to each other. And certainly, you're not going to use controlled substances with law-abiding individuals out of fear that they would report you.
Those aren't things that the affiant included in the affidavit.
He did in reference the drug subculture and the association with other individuals who are using.
But he didn't talk about it's better to use with people in case you overdose or those right. sorts of things is what I'm getting at.
Right. All of those things would come from the totality of the circumstances and practical common sense inferences that can be made from the information present in the warrant.
What do we do with his inclusion of the May 14th tip from the online reporting system?
Granted, the state does acknowledge there's not a lot of information there. We don't know who the reporter is. It's just an example of the totality of the circumstances that law enforcement is getting information from presumably multiple sources. So we have the known reporter that he met in person with that came through the supplemental questions, but it's clear in the affidavit that he knew who that person was. And this is just another venue through which he's receiving information about this residence.
And this anonymous report talks about someone named Nick who took over while Jack's in jail. Was Nick referenced in the affidavit?
I don't recall him being referenced, no, Your Honor. So when we look at the totality, we have probationers who are considered more likely to violate. We have specific conditions. We have drug users associating with one another. We have similar conduct as their history. And we have this ongoing conduct. It's not a one time I forgot my phone charger in the car, so I run out and get it. You have the ongoing conduct that is all consistent with controlled substance use and possession. So we're not asking for a hyper-technical or isolated review. And certainly there is no mathematical formula for search warrants. Whether it's weak or strong, as long as there is probable cause, it's a valid search warrant. Both the signing judge and the district court found that there was probable cause, and we asked this court to find the same and to deny the appellant's motion in full.
One last question. Sure. In the federal system, search warrants like this can be saved by the Leon standard. The state doesn't have the Leon standard or case.
Not that I'm aware of. What we have in this particular case would be that alternative reasonable articulable suspicion standard, which is not eliminated by the protection of the suspect's right in getting that search warrant. That would be an alternative that would be separate review. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Robbins, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you want to use that time.
Your Honors, I'll briefly address the reasonable suspicion standard. I do not believe that would be appropriate in this matter. As Your Honors have addressed in a recently unpublished case, State v. Cornier, a probationer search is a different type of search conducted by a parole officer or probation officer. That's subject to reasonable suspicion. Minnesota Statute 609.135 sets forth the fact that those searches can be conducted by parole officers or probation officers. It does not say law enforcement officers. Therefore, given that this was not a probationer search, the standard remains unchanging. The standard is probable cause in this case. As to the state has made reference a number of times to the probation status of Ms. Frisbee. It's undisputed that Ms. Frisbee is on probation. I would encourage this court to analyze that in the same way they would with a criminal history. I think it's analogous to a criminal history. In fact, it is just part of her criminal history. It's not in dispute that she's on probation. But again, one's criminal history is best used as corroborative evidence. It certainly can be taken into consideration under the totality of circumstances standard, but it's best used as corroborative evidence. The state alludes to cases involving a trash pull. Certainly, if they had a trash pull in this case, they would have a much better direct connection with Ms. Frisbee's home. They would have some sort of contraband that came from presumably Ms. Frisbee's home. I'm going to reference the traffic stop of Mr. Bryson. That is essentially what I'd like to call con minus, State v. Con. He was apprehended 75 miles away from his house, and that was found to be insufficient probable cause. Here we have a social guest of Ms. Frisbee, certainly, but not an occupant of the home who was apprehended some distance away at some time after possibly having gone to Ms. Frisbee's home with drugs. And then you have maybe Carter or Carter Plus with the facts about Ms. Frisbee's actual residence. And that was found by the Minnesota Supreme Court insufficient to support reasonable suspicion to conduct a dog sniff search. I'm not sure that con minus would be sufficient to push Carter above the threshold and support a showing of probable cause. And in terms of contact with probationers, again, I think that that's handled by reference to Carter. One's associates in and of itself is not sufficient to support a showing of probable cause. They can certainly be taken into account under the totality of circumstances, but I think when this court analyzes all the evidence set forth in the search warrant affidavit, it shows a paucity of cause, and I do not think it's appropriate to find probable cause in this matter. Unless there's any questions, I will rest my case. Thank you, Your Honors.
It appears we have none. The matter is submitted. We'll issue our decision within 90 days, and we